Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, and welcome to the Great Big Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I am just delighted with what's about to happen here over the next 2 hours because we have this thing that we do on Fridays every now and then. We assemble a panel of people who I would like to talk with, and we get to talk about things that I would like to talk about. So how could you get a better Friday than that? And joining me for the panel conversations today on issues of import in the Catholic world are Father Hugh Barber, our chaplain, Norbertine priest, and former prior of St. Michael's Abbey right up the road. Hello, Father.
Hello, hello.
And also joining us for the first time for this panel, somebody who we have long contract negotiations to get him to be willing to come in here, but we've wanted him for a long time. Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers magazine, and I will say it again, one of the finest Catholic publications on the earth. Tim, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I thought you were going to say one of the finest Catholic men on the earth, but I'll settle for magazine.
Well, I can say one of the finest Catholic men on the earth as
Goodness
well.
No, you can't.
It would just be referring to Father.
But, yes, of course.
No. Well, see, we match because we're both PKs. We're both
That's right.
sons of Episcopalian priests.
What does PK mean? I don't know.
Preacher's kid.
Oh, a preacher's kid.
Yes,
oh,
they're both PKs.
Okay.
Right. That's right.
So we're ill-behaved, entitled, all of that.
I've noticed that about you, Father. I have never noticed that about Tim.
You didn't see him when he was younger.
I guess not. Now,
wow,
okay.
Father.
So let us discuss for just a quick moment. I want to know about that. Tim, your father was the chaplain here.
He was 20 some years ago,
mm-hmm. But he started.
That was
out,
back when Catholic Answers was Episcopalian Answers.
Or? That is no, we were not Episcopalian Answers. We were Catholic.
Since they didn't have any, they decided to change the name.
Your father is actually a fascinating person and a fascinating story. He was among the first priests of the Anglican Communion. Is that the right way to say it?
Yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh. Who were married men who came into the Catholic priesthood?
That's right.
In what year did he come in?
Well, he converted in 1963.
Okay.
And he knew that this indult had been granted in other parts of the world. He always felt a call to the priesthood, but in his studies and prayers as an Episcopal priest felt like he had to become a Catholic. That's where the truth lay. And the question of authority was the key question for my dad, who has the authority to interpret scripture, et cetera, to hold tradition. He waited 18 years until the indult was granted here in 1981. Pope St. John Paul II granted it. My father was one of the first applicants through Cardinal Bernard Law in Boston at the time, and was ordained in 1983, so 20 years after he came into the priesthood. He was the fourth Episcopal clergy to be ordained in this country. It was a big deal at the time. He was in the LA Times. He was on the Merv Griffin Show.
Yeah. he was on the Merv Griffin
well,
Show, really?
It was called the Pastoral Provision, and it still exists because they have the ordinariate with a bishop and everything for the Anglicans, but there still exists this pastoral provision that can be used by individual dioceses to take in Anglican priests and also some Lutherans as well.
That's right.
Lutherans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when your father becomes a priest in 1983, did he have to do a seminary at a Catholic seminary, or what did they require of him?
They required the exams that a seminarian takes.
Oh,
as I recall.
I see.
The theological exams, et cetera.
Okay, and so you're in your teens then.
I was early 20s.
Oh, you were early 20s.
Or mid 20s.
When he became.
Okay, I was 40.
Come on, we know you're not that old. but. Now, Father, your father, also an Anglican priest, but he
converted in retirement.
He converted in retirement because he was quite a prominent Anglican priest up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he was fairly prominent, yeah. If not notorious.
Was he notorious? He was a notorious priest. I'm glad to hear that.
But not nearly as notorious as his son has become.
It's funny. I didn't know we were going to talk about this. It didn't occur to me that you were our two sons of Catholic priests.
I don't know if there are any other
Anglican priests.
Any other children of ministers around here. There may be some.
We do have quite a few converts to the Catholic faith.
We do. We have a lot of converts, yeah.
So you were raised a Catholic, though.
Yeah, I was six when I was baptized, so I feel like a cradle Catholic.
Yeah, but Father, you were raised in the Anglican
Church. I was raised Episcopal Church, I converted early. I won't go into all the details because it's like, what's that dragnet? The names have to be changed to protect the innocent.
Oh, yeah, right.
So I can't tell the whole story. But let's just say it was my father's doing in the sense that I didn't know any Catholics at all. But I always wanted to be a Catholic, and he was very reasonable about it and didn't oppose my staying in the Catholic
Church.
Which
is really a wonderful thing, because the fact that he was a priest, you know, people will look askance. I'm sure some people did on his son, priest's son becoming a Catholic.
Had a parishioner saying, oh, Father Barber, why did your son become a Roman? That's what he had to say, a Roman, which I liked kind of. And he said, well, I taught him too well.
Oh, wow.
They just shut him up. Shut him up.
Good, but
we had an agreement that I had to come to church with them, and I had to, you know, not embarrass them.
Yes.
So I came to church with them. I sometimes sang in the choir. If the wedding were a licit one from a Catholic point of view, I would serve weddings. But that's also for the do-re-mi part, you know, because when you're a teenager, you like to make money off the weddings. But in any case, so there was some communicatio in sacris, as we call it. But anyway, it worked out well, although they had to put up with a lot because I was a teenager and so I was a know-it-all.
Really? You were a know-it-all?
Can you imagine?
Father Hugh Barber was a know-it-all as a teenager.
No, isn't that? I had no idea.
Isn't that horrible?
Did we sound sarcastic when we said
and now,
that?
I can't believe that I was ever like that.
None of us can believe it.
Now he literally does know it all,
you don't have to underline it too much.
Well, okay. I'm fascinated to talk about that, but I want to move to our first topic for our panel discussion today.
Yes.
And thank you both for joining us for this Friday panel conversation. For the listener, if you'd like to get in on this conversation, 888-31-TRUTH remains our number, and you're welcome to use it today, 888-318-7884. But I wanted to ask you, there's a lot going on in which people are currently going through kind of public crucibles or being publicly judged in one way or another. We see the woman who came forth with her claims about the Supreme Court nominee, Judge Kavanaugh. And so then both of them have to face a kind of crucible because of this. We see Archbishop Vigano. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Vigano.
Vigano.
Right, got it.
Who
accent on the last syllable.
All right. With his accusations about the Pope and then accusations about both living popes, the Pope Emeritus and the Pope.
Doesn't that sound freaky, both living popes? That sounds so awful.
It just sounds strange to say both living popes. Yeah, but 191, 181, by the way, because you're wondering about their ages. But it just seemed – and then I have to say, this never happened to me before until I came here to Catholic Answers, but they said you got to do something on Catholic media. So I've kind of settled on Twitter because I'm going to be honest with you. It's the least work. And you just 144 characters, do your best. And so
I think the Donald figured that out too.
Oh, that's probably maybe
the least work and the biggest effect.
I may share a lazy streak with our president. It's possible. But on Twitter is more or less designed for what we Catholics call or have called over the centuries rash judgment. And so I wanted to come to the two of you to say, what do you do in a case? Like, let's just start with maybe this she said, he said, Kavanaugh thing. It seems to me an unknowable. Like, I don't have access in this life to know what happened. So what do I do?
Well, here we've got I just have right here, I have Prümer's Vade Mecum of moral theology that the confessors used to use in the confessional. It's very convenient. It has all the definitions here, right here. Wow. And he gives a definition of rash judgment, of the notion and malice of rash judgment. He says, rash judgment is the firm assent of the mind regarding the fault of another without sufficient reason.
Oh.
So you firmly assent to the evil or the fault of another without a sufficient reason. And with the Kavanaugh case, that's pretty obvious. Because there's no – the people that are saying, I believe her, he's guilty, there's no way they could possibly know with that degree of certitude that they could say publicly – the people that are saying, well, we need to investigate, all right, now granted, they sigh and go, do we really need to go through this? But they're at least being responsible and saying, who can know unless we look into the matter?
Right.
Or someone makes a public confession
right.
or whatever. But the fact is, people that say, I believe her, it's certain, it's certainly true. Who would not? She wouldn't come forward because it's so horrible for her to do that unless she were telling the truth. That's all rash judgment. Completely.
Well, I have to say, in my own life, I've had memories. I wonder if you ever have, where you see someone and you go, you remember that time you did this? And the person says, that wasn't me. That was this other guy that did that. And I have grown – I mean, I have a very unreliable memory anyways.
Yeah, I do too.
But
it's quite convenient.
especially when
you're a bad boy.
Yeah, well, I can't remember any of that. It's as far from me as the East is from the West now, Father.
Kavanaugh doesn't remember either. It's okay.
Well, but the thing is, like, you could say – I mean, wouldn't it be reasonable – I'm going to talk to you as a kind of a journalist in this – but wouldn't it be reasonable to say – it's perfectly okay to say, yes, I do believe her. Something terrible obviously happened to this woman, but I don't know how reliable her memory is about who did it. Mm-hmm. She doesn't.
Right.
So what do you think, Tim Ryland, journalist?
Oh, wow. I did work in a newsroom for a number of years as an editor there, and I had talked to Cy briefly about this. You know, when you've got any kind of breaking news, it's really and waves of information are coming in by the moment or by the half hour from reporters. You really can't equitably pass judgment for any length of time, sometimes days or weeks. And that certainly is true in the case of this, and also in the case of anything the church engages herself in, right, in terms of sainthood or anything like that. It's one of the reasons the church has moved so slowly is because there's wisdom in that, and there's the rash judgment becomes a non-issue. I again, with the Kavanaugh thing, it's like we don't know. So you may have an inclination to believe one way or the other, but the only other person, apparently three people in the room, one was another man, granted, but two of the people say this never happened. So if you want to just go purely on evidentiary,
right.
you know, matters, two against one. I mean, you know, that's a jury would find him not guilty, I guess. So, but,
right.
But the bigger point is, we should resort to prayer.
Yeah.
You know, in this kind of stuff, even if we have a feeling, we should really work on not judging. And we may have a feeling about it politically. That's a whole different thing. But to decide, even if, and I feel strongly one way or the other, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really, that's right. It. We don't know. We may likely never know. So it just becomes more of a political question.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask you about the psychological tendency, maybe it's even a spiritual tendency, I don't know, to the less certain we are, the more forcefully we will assert a thing sometimes. Yeah. And it's almost in a way to kind of – I don't know what we're doing. I'm going to let you talk to that. Right now, I do want to let people know that the bulk book sale is still on. If you want to buy books in bulk, maybe share them with people, maybe give them as Christmas presents, maybe put them out at your parish with the permission of your pastor. Books as much as $16.95 can now be had for as low as $1 to $5 a copy when you purchase in bulk.
Wow.
Trent's book, Why We're Catholic, and Layla Miller's book, Made This Way, and Matt Frad's Delivered and Restored and Persuasive Pro-Life and all of our 20 Answers titles, all that stuff. It's a great way to share the faith. You just go to Bulk Book Specials at shop.catholic.com and get your bulk books today.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Catherine Zeltner.
There are so many misconceptions when it comes to abortion and assisted suicide. It's really confusing, and I think for a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about these things. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, we help to change that. We help to really untangle these web of lies. Listeners can expect to become informed and then grow more confident so that they can then discuss and dialogue these issues, and together we can really impact culture in that way.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on EWTN Radio.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884.
This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio today by Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, and by Father Hugh Barber, our chaplain here at Catholic Answers. And when we have these panels on Friday, we get to talk about what we like. And in the news right now are lots and lots of, well, frankly, there's lots and lots of people judging people. Mm-hmm. And so we want to talk about the Catholic standard for these kinds of things, because we do have to make distinctions. Often we have to make I'll just go like the senators right now. They're in a position where they actually have to make a judgment. They have a duty to make a judgment right now. Mm-hmm. So how do they exercise that duty given the conditions of the knowledge that they have at the moment?
Are we speaking specifically about the Kavanaugh High School?
Yeah, the Kavanaugh thing, yeah. Right.
Okay.
Because they got to make a decision, I imagine, within 10 mm-hmm. days or so about mm-hmm. whether this man will sit on the Supreme Court.
Well, they don't have to make a decision. They want to because they would like to do it before the midterms.
Right.
But that's what this all is probably partly about. Although, again, speaking of rash judgment, it could be, I personally don't tend towards this judgment, but it could be that Feinstein didn't want to bring it up because she didn't want to embarrass him unnecessarily in case the hearings went badly for him anyway. Like, we don't need to pull this thing out if things go badly for him otherwise.
Yeah.
But now that we haven't gotten our way, we're going to throw this out there to screw everything up. But, you know, so she may have had something of a good intention in waiting. And especially concerning this woman and whatnot, but I think that they've obviously pressured the woman to.
Do you think so?
I think she didn't want to go this far, and they're just putting heavy pressure on her to go all the way with it. But that just shows how these motivations, they're mixed. They keep changing. Sometimes they're really evil. Sometimes they're mildly reasonable. Sometimes they're, you know, because I mean they're working in an institution which has a lot of canons of behavior, and we saw those violated in the most ludicrous way during mm-hmm. the hearings with all the mm-hmm. grandstanding and kookiness, and you would have thought that it was over. And then one of the most sober, at least by status, members, namely Feinstein, ends up being the one to throw this mess in the mix.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's and I've noticed like Grassley and the other people, they show great reserve. And they're very edifying in the sense that they don't give in to rash judgment.
Yeah.
They just say, well, this woman needs to be heard. And they don't make any mean comments about her, about anybody else. They just, even though you know very well, they're thinking.
Come on. Well, the thing is, you really couldn't.
They
restrain
themselves.
Yeah, but a person is alleging a sexual assault,
yeah.
Basically. So as a journalist, what would you look for? You would look for what to corroborate this?
Well, this is a tough one because it was
36 years ago. Yeah,
This is one of those horrible he said, she said things. As a journalist, I don't know how, as any human being, I don't know how you get to the truth of the matter if one person's saying one thing and one person's saying another. We are, of course, dealing in the zeitgeist, which is any type of sexual peccadillo of the slightest type that 25 years ago, I'm not passing judgment whether this is good or bad. I'm being PC here. I'm just saying it carries so much more import than it did 25 years ago. This could have been shrugged off 25 years ago. Now, when the Me Too era, it's one of the worst things that could come up, even though it was 36 years ago. Even though there wasn't a rape. There was, you know, there was.
Who knows? I mean, he says there was nothing.
But yeah, But she doesn't. What you're saying, she doesn't allege a rape.
She alleges
something very serious, but
yes,
short of that,
that's
yeah.
right.
Something happened somewhere. I don't know exactly where, on what day. I don't remember, but you know,
yeah.
it
yeah.
happened.
Right.
And so I sometimes come back to the woman who was going to be stoned when Jesus said, you know, go and sin no more. Let the first cast the first stone. I wonder how many people sitting in that room or sitting out here listening up to all of these current events have not done something very similar 35, 40 years ago. By the grace of God, we all grow, we all mature, we all evolve
Repent.
Into better human beings. Does
Repent,
that mean
yeah.
that
right.
we should be held responsible for some horrible thing that we did, you know, decades ago?
In fact, people pay therapists to work through those things.
That's right. So
this is part of the shame culture, too, where you're constantly trying to shame people. you know.
Yes.
Your enemies, shame your enemies.
Right. That's true. That's a shame as a kind of a political tactic almost nowadays. But okay, so I suppose a good person could come to either, and it may be based on their life experience. I've had these experiences. I see these shape how I look at this situation. So if we could concede that a decent person could end up on any side of this, and but the tendency, however, I would say, is to make judgments based. I'm going to say this: my tendency, that I experience this within myself, a tendency to give greater credence to accusations against people who I see as my enemies or as opposing the things that I think are good in this world.
Sure.
And so, you know, like I always try to think, well, okay, so this accusation is made against this political figure here, you can name almost, but they're on my team.
Right.
I poo-poo it. But the other person, now I don't poo-poo it because they're not on my team.
Right.
So mentally you kind of try to switch them and go, how would I actually feel if this person was on my team? But we don't have full control of our emotions, and our emotions are a big part of how we make judgments.
And that's at the root of a lot of rash judgment, because it's if you consider what's the malice of rash judgment, it's precisely the injustice towards the person who has a right to his reputation.
Yeah.
And you, without sufficient knowledge, have made a firm judgment, which then you repeat as truth. And so you may be detracting the person. That is, you may be revealing a real fault of theirs, or you may be committing calumny and telling something that's false. But either one of those things is a sin.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just strikes me so much about the situation is that someone needs to say in a reasonable way, I'll say it, that a sin that somebody committed in their teen years, but which was not a pattern of behavior.
Oh,
and
I see.
Where they never showed, once they got into positions of authority, that they were manipulating their position in order to gain access to women, for example. That's much more serious, for example.
Like, yes, right.
Like if he had done stuff since he'd been a judge and a lawyer, and the universal testimony is that he's always treated women with the greatest possible respect. So you say, there's no pattern here. Maybe he did it, maybe he didn't, but it really doesn't matter because it has nothing to do with the job he's being considered for.
Okay.
And nowadays you can't say that.
No, because people will say, "Well, now you're saying it's just boys will be boys." That's what I hear.
But that's you could say it that way if you wanted to, but I would just say, you know, people commit sins, and the important thing for public office is this a pattern of behavior which includes their manipulation of their position in order to continue this behavior, or is it just something they did in their past that's nobody's business? If you're going to be a judge,
wow.
Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, really, honestly,
that's the thing is
just wrong. Ronald Reagan was notorious for being a womanizer as a Hollywood actor.
Was he really?
Yes.
I actually didn't know
yes,
that.
Yes, and nobody ever mentions it because everyone loves Ronald Reagan. Of course we do. What difference does it make? He was a good man. He repented. He became he was married once. That marriage was annulled. He married again. He was always a good, faithful man. And just so yes, you know, he did some things that were wrong. In his youth, in an environment of immorality, which we promote now because Hollywood is everything now, the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
But let's just say, we're not interested in that. We want him to – there's no evidence that he or anyone else used their position to promote immorality. So why not just drop it? That's what I would say.
Well, I would agree with you, Father, but it's a very un-PC thing to say.
It is a very un-PC.
That's where the zeitgeist presses us down.
That's why
we have to be un-PC. Don't you think as Catholics we have to be un-PC?
Everyone is supposed to be sinless. I mean, these people have become the Cotton Mathers of the modern world, that you've got to be this perfect person.
Just in case there's someone who doesn't know who Cotton Mather is, that's a Puritan preacher who was really hard on people.
No, but I mean, it's just ridiculous. Who doesn't have something in their past?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I got nothing.
Nothing either. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure my brother could drag something up from my childhood and say, you know, he once did this or that. I mean, who knows? You know, it's just anyway.
Well, we also have the other kind of rash judgment today, which is the kind of thing where I'll be honest with you. I have these two women who I know, and they're within a certain social circle that I exist in, and they're a lesbian couple. And they, I get the sense that they're cold to me because they know that I have a that I'm on a Catholic radio program. Yeah. Now I could be rashly judging them, but we do kind of tend to associate. Well, oh, you're a Catholic, so you disapprove of us. So therefore, I don't want to talk to you. That's the way. That's the impression that I get. And I see Catholics do the same thing too. Like that's a you know that person is a. I don't know, whatever. They're a atheist or they're a gay couple themselves. Clearly, they would not want anything to do with me and blah, 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 blah. Mm. And that's a kind of rash judgment too, wouldn't you say, Tim?
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, certainly. I would say that any type of judgment of people's lives when you don't have any knowledge of it, where you're just assuming something, whether they're gay, whether they're heterosexual, is what I think we're called not to do, which is to judge. We should just love them and meet them on their own terms and witness the love of Christ to them. Turning away from them does no good. That doesn't do it.
All right. Yeah. Turning away from me does no good either, though.
Well, let's try.
I need them not to stop turning away from me, Tim. All right. More on judgment when we come back, because I want to ask you both, when is it appropriate to make judgments then? If we say it is, in fact, a sin to make rash judgments, when can we make judgments? Right back after this.
This is Dr. Scott Hahn, and stay tuned for more Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, 5 Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked 5 distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from 5 perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
It's often noted that the only real way to become humble is to experience humiliation.
Share your takes on humiliation on Monday's Take 2 with Jerry and Debbie.
Now let's return to Cy Kellett and more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio by Tim Ryland and Father Hugh Barber, my guests for the entire afternoon as we discuss news and things of import and just stuff that I want to talk about that is important to Catholics because I find these men interesting and I find these topics interesting and I hope you do as well. 888-318-7884, the number. 888-318-7884. I believe I have been accused a little bit in recent weeks of defending the Pope too much. And I don't feel like I have. I do feel like you have to reserve a great deal of judgment regarding the Pope. I'm very wary of making judgments about the Pope based on the idea that I don't really like this Pope and this is a chance to get rid of him, rather than what are the facts of the matter, have all the facts come out, all that kind of thing. And I believe he has the right, both as our spiritual father and as a human being just in general, to have a reservation of judgment about his behavior regarding Cardinal McCarrick in particular. Now I want now that I've said that, I am I know I'm a dirty defender of Pope Francis or whatever, but what do you make of all this? I mean, I have to say, I'm even going to say something more controversial, all right, because I can't get you two to start talking. I'm going to say something even more controversial, see if I can get you in on this. Even if popes make mistakes and don't deal with grave situations correctly, they have a world church to govern, and if a pope says, oh man, I got that one wrong, like he said in Chile, move on, people. That's where I am now. Please correct me, or hold my feet to the fire, or the callers will if you don't. So, would you agree with me that there are some rash judgments being made against Pope Francis?
Oh, to be sure, of course.
Okay. That's yes, what I couldn't get you two to talk yes. on, but you're
obviously, I'm just
terrified
waiting
of the Pope or something.
No, we just have to weigh our words when we talk about these things.
I guess you do. Obviously. You have to be very, very careful.
All right, it's very yeah. clear that we have to weigh our words. The fact is, he didn't create the situation that he was elected to begin with. Right?
No,
he's
indeed.
Not the source of all the rot.
Amen.
And okay, he was not Pope when McCarrick was doing all the things he was doing. Yep. And then when he became pope, he was informed and didn't act in a timely manner. That's the accusation. So the accusation is he didn't act in a timely manner, but this had been brought to the attention of successive Roman pontiffs. He's not the first, okay? But he was the first to Pope Benedict believed it and then privately corrected McCarrick. He actually finally believed it and publicly removed him.
He did
There you are. I mean, he corrected his past behavior by doing what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And so that in that case, it's fine. I think that there are all kinds of other aspects of this pontificate that obviously are a matter of great concern to different people who work closely in the administration of the Catholic Church worldwide, including Archbishop Vigano. But I'll just give my opinion, and that is that it's perfectly appropriate for someone to rebuke or admonish a pope in an extreme circumstance, even publicly.
Fair enough.
And the example is there from, you know, Peter rebuking Paul.
Or and Paul rebuking Peter.
Excuse me. Paul, yeah, excuse me. Well, yeah, and then Peter makes comments about Paul's letters in his epistle. So they tit for tat.
So we've had this from the beginning. And then the
founder of my order, St. Norbert, he rebuked the pope publicly at a liturgy for giving in or about to give in to the emperor, but he didn't. And of course, you've got Catherine of Siena, who said sweet words to the Pope. You know, even if you were the devil,
it's perfectly fine to criticize
still obey
a Pope.
You. Yes. Nice left-handed.
Even
compliment.
If you were the devil, right. I would still
the
obey.
Devil himself, right? I would still love you. You know, as the sweet Christ on earth. So that's all good, but it isn't our place publicly. You could do it privately. Publicly to suggest that the Pope should step down. That's just wrong.
Okay.
I really think that's just simply wrong, and that's what screwed the whole intervention up. I think that as I said, you could do that privately. It goes without saying that might cross his mind since his predecessor abdicated. But the fact is you want to say, Daddy, do your job, not Daddy, quit your job.
Right.
The Pope's position is incomparable. It's the head of the visible church on earth.
Yeah.
There's nothing compared to it. And to reduce it to a kind of political position where you can resign because you're going off in a snit or you can't handle
the pressure's too great, or
whatever, and then you still live 15 years later, you know, and you're perfectly in possession of your faculties and could have stayed.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you can't do it.
Look, this is church history, folks. Yeah. We make this analysis of previous popes hundreds of years ago, and we're not disedified by it because it's not current news. But the same stuff is going on now that went on then, and we just need to be faithful Catholics, loving the Holy Father, praying for him, and just, you know, hoping it'll all turn out fine. And it will.
And it will all turn out fine. All right.
But it's painful.
Tim. Sorry, I felt like we were leaving you out of the conversation.
And what he said.
Oh, you're just going to go with what he said.
No, I agree with everything Father said. But I also think that in this day and age, a papacy should be aware of the optics of the situation, the way things appear to people. Mm-hmm. I do think that's a real concern, whether or not there's nefarious things going on. The fact that things don't look very good, or you see bishops called to Rome to talk about things, and the official photo released, they're all chuckling together over something.
Oh, I heard about that. I didn't see that.
Yeah, but, and that was the official Vatican. Some people aren't thinking about the severity
Fair enough. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Father, you're shaking your head.
I just am saying, with what's going on now, he doesn't have enough lace and ermine picks. If he had a few more of those, people might take him more seriously.
I do not know what that means. You're going to have to explain that to me at the break.
I could put the papal crown back on him, too.
Right. That would work better.
We're talking about rash judgment this hour in part because we live in a society that is pretty much addicted to rash judgment. I mean,
absolutely.
The fact is it's kind of an addiction. You turn on one of the comment shows. I used to call them news shows, but they're not news shows. They're comment shows in the evening. And the job of the panelists is to make consistent rash judgments over and over and over again, and then to defend those rash judgments so that we are addicted to it. I want to let some callers get in. Yeah. Not everybody's happy with the comments thus far, and I want to allow them to have an opportunity to air those. Let us go to Anonymous in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Anonymous, thank you for joining us for our panel conversation. Your comment or question, please.
I was going to comment on the Kavanaugh.
Yeah, sure. You're welcome. Whatever you'd like to say.
Okay. What I'd like to say is I'm not sure I believe the woman because 46 years ago I was raped and I remember everything. And there has been forgiveness over the years and I would not want to damage anyone's career because I think it's too important. But if you have a experience like that, you don't forget a thing.
I can imagine. Did this man who assaulted you, did he apologize to you?
Oh, yes.
He did?
Most definitely. It was some years later, but we had a very good conversation. And we have since had a good conversation, and he more profusely apologized and was very remorseful, and I had forgiven him.
Well, you are a heroic person to do that. That's extraordinary to hear you say that you forgave him, and that you would not want to ruin his life now. I think you might be referring to a comment that I made that we often mix up things that have happened decades ago. You're saying that you don't think that this woman could have mixed it up.
No.
Fair enough.
Not at all.
Fair enough. I wonder if you would Caitlin Flanagan, a writer for The Atlantic, wrote a piece about how this had happened to her.
It's amazing article. It's excellent.
And said that she believes this woman as well. But her point was that she was able to come to forgiveness of the man who assaulted her. He was a boy when he did this, but because he apologized so profusely to her, does it give you I suppose my question is, does it give you a different sense about Judge Kavanaugh because there appears to have been no apology?
No, because I don't believe he did it.
Oh, I see. I didn't quite understand what you had said. Go ahead.
No, I don't believe he did it because if that really happened, she would remember everything. I remember details.
I see. And you're saying she does not remember where the party was or even what year it was exactly.
Right.
Fair enough.
I remember the date.
I feel very inspired by your call. I just want to let you know that. It's extraordinary because I think we just don't meet people who make heroic acts of forgiveness every day. And you've done that. And I thank you for sharing your story with us.
Well, I just wanted to get my comment out there because, like I said, that was 10 years longer than what this person has said. And I will never, ever, ever forget it.
May I ask you this? Do you feel like in your own healing that having forgiven is part of your healing as well?
Oh, yes.
You're a remarkable person. I'm very grateful for your call. Thank you. And thank you for your comments. They're very helpful to us.
It's called being a Christian.
Yes, that's a Christian woman. But so when you actually meet a Christian who is a Christian, it's impressive.
When it comes to the Me Too, we're not supposed to forgive.
Is that true?
It's not allowed. It's not allowed because it's not allowed.
But there are these vicious men who did vicious things to women, and they don't apologize.
Right.
And
that's different.
Yeah.
That's different. It's very different. But the problem is that the baby's being thrown out with the bathwater with some very innocent and upright people. It's obvious. So that's the problem.
Well, I wish I knew Anonymous's name. I don't know it, so I will just say, Anonymous, thank you so much for that call and for giving us a reason to maybe take more seriously our obligation to forgive. I've never been through something like that.
Sure.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our panel conversation here on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
And I wanted to tell you guys how great your show is because I listen to you guys for every day for the last past 5.5 months. It's because of you guys that I came to the Catholic faith. Now I'm going to church on Sunday for the first time because I just got out yesterday from jail. And I got my mom to go too. And my girlfriend is also going with me. Wow. She's willing to give the Catholic faith a try.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We need partners in parishes to help us get the news out about Catholic Answers. You may know that Catholic Answers Live is not on every Catholic radio station in the country.
Shocking.
Is that shocking? Are you shocked by that, Tim?
I'm shocked by it.
And especially if you live in those areas, if you can let people know that we're still on the app, we're online, we're on EWTN's global satellite radio network, all these places. Because I still run into people who say, oh, I'm so sorry you're off the air, but we're... We're not off the air. You just got to find us. And if you'd like to be a parish partner, what that involves is we send you free stuff. And with the permission of your parish, you can give that to fellow parishioners, leave it out for fellow parishioners to find, and help people know that Catholic Answers Live is here. The way you become a parish partner, you go to CatholicAnswersLive.com, our webpage, CatholicAnswersLive.com, and there's a little button at the top that says Become a Partner. You click it. You don't actually become a partner when you click it. If you just want more information, you can do that. Go ahead and click that button. Not everybody who has called has agreed with our positions, and some have been offended by our positions vis-a-vis the judgments about how to make judgments and what judgments we made, I guess, about Judge Kavanaugh and maybe other things. But I want to read to you what Cheryl from Colorado said. We wanted to get to her on the phone, but she is no longer on the phone with us. Marie says she was very gracious, but these were her comments, and maybe we could get a reply from you gentlemen. I am really repulsed by the comments about Kavanaugh. How can it not matter what he has done in the past? I am really disappointed at the conversation happening around such a sensitive women's issue. Whether the private opinions of the panel, whatever the private opinions of the panel, it does not come across well over public radio to say possible violence against someone should be ignored or doesn't matter. So I'm not entirely convinced that – I wish we could have a conversation with Cheryl. And Cheryl, we'll invite you to call back anytime in the next hour and 15 minutes, and we'd love to talk with you about it. I'm not sure that's a fair characterization of what we were saying, but let me put this to you. We do frequently hear when I don't have a woman guest, like, you know, Rose or Stacy or one of the many other women guests we have on, people will say, why are you talking about issues that are important to women? You're men. I generally, I'm going to be brutally honest, ignore those comments because I feel very strongly that I don't need someone else's permission to speak about anything. And I don't ask people to get my permission before they speak about anything. I don't like that. And I feel that that's become like a trope in our society that, oh, you don't get to speak about this because you don't match the profile of an acceptable speaker on this topic. I didn't ask your permission, and I'm not going to ask your permission. I'm sorry if I seem hot about that, but I don't need someone's permission to talk about a grave moral issue like rash judgment.
Because you happen to be a man.
because I happen to be a man, or because I happen to be goofy or old or whatever my disqualification is.
There you are. You might say that there's a misunderstanding. There are like two different narratives going on here, and she has a narrative. This nice Cheryl who called in, who was very polite and so on, and she's hearing something which is not exactly what was said, because no one said it doesn't matter or it should be ignored, but rather that the balance of judgment regarding the span of a whole human life, and I mentioned repeatedly patterns of behavior, right, abuse of office, all of these things. Do we really want to have a society where you can be 55 with a family and had an innocent life, but then it turns out that you did something when you were 18 once?
Yeah.
And everything has to come to a screeching halt, and you're publicly shamed, right, and booted out. That to me doesn't look like a society that makes prudent judgments about the value of a human life and human activity. And I think the women's issue thing is needs to be properly evaluated. It's not an anti-feminist or anti-woman position to take. It has to do with the person's dignity and reputation and their capacity to fulfill a public office. And if you – I mean, just go down – this is what they're doing now. Just go down the list of the founding fathers and just see how many of them had mistresses or whatever. Look at Thomas Jefferson. You know, we could just like remove every single historical figure that ever mattered at all and just say we can't talk about him anymore.
Right.
Because he was a terrible, horrible person. And so and they were actually misusing their position in their office. I mean, with Thomas Jefferson, you could say, well, you know, actually he was really misusing his position, you know.
Yes, because he owned one of the people.
Right, because he owned one.
That's
exactly.
a very difficult violation.
Thing. But I mean, here we're talking about something else, and I just think that it's sad, and we're bringing up our children in this atmosphere, this environment of recrimination and bitter. You know,
yes.
It's like the Soviet Union, where if you're a middle class farmer, then you're automatically the enemy of the people, and you don't get to say anything.
Right.
You're just supposed to turn over your property and go away or be killed. And that's the kind of tone for these things. It's like, well, I guess if you ever committed a sin against chastity, you're out. But that's not the way they say it, because they promote the culture that sins against chastity.
Yeah, but Cheryl doesn't.
Cheryl doesn't. But, right. I mean, they promote the murder of people's children and call it a women's issue. So that kind of culture is merciless.
It is a merciless thing, yeah. And
I'm not talking about Cheryl. Because Cheryl's a nice lady, and I get why she's frustrated. And I would have to listen to what I said and see if I would have said it slightly differently, just so as not to be annoying.
I do believe at the moment that we were discussing that, I had asked you about how does a senator make that judgment. And at a certain point, Tim, you wanted to jump in.
I just wanted to say that as a former journalist, that the pendulum has swung so far. A couple of days ago, I saw on my news feed, I'm not going to say it was something to the level of CNN, but it was a major outlet reporting. It was a major story that...
It was NPR. I know what you're referring to.
Is it the woman...
A friend of the woman said this happened.
No, this is actually a whole different matter. This was a woman who was considering clerking for Kavanaugh. She was told by a woman who I guess was an expert in helping people get clerkships and advising them, et cetera. She said that the Judge Kavanaugh liked his female interns to have a certain look. That was the phrase, quote, a certain look, without specifying what the look was, nothing more than that. And so, and this woman said there was nothing, Kavanaugh was never said anything, never acted untoward, but this was a major news story, the fact that a third party told another third party that he liked a certain look, and they didn't specify what the look was.
That's just character assassination.
It's called a dress code.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing that if it had come into even the National Enquirer 20 years ago, they said, no, we need something more than this. We need to know at least what the look was.
Yeah.
But it's just so outrageous that I think it's come to that, and keeping Cheryl and everybody like that in mind who are well-intentioned and have good hearts, there's a pendulum that swung too far in one direction or the other, and it's really – it's like a scythe. It's really taking down a lot of people.
Okay, but let's just for a moment about what's the appropriate response of a society that says, look, okay, This may have happened. It may not. We don't actually know. And in the absence of knowledge, a 17-year-old who shows no pattern of any of this at any other time in his life, we can say we just have to move on from it because we literally cannot know. But the to the woman who makes this – that's not a dismissal of the woman who makes this accusation.
Not at all.
So what's an appropriate kind of Christian response to the woman who makes this accusation? Because it's very serious. And she seems to be a very – I mean, there's nothing about her that suggests this is a – you know, just a attention seeker or a crazy person. She seems to be making a legitimate point about something that happened in her life. So tell me, what's – can we do both things? Can we say, I don't know, and this is very far in the past, and it doesn't seem like I can know, so we're going to move on, but at the same time not dismiss the woman? Is that possible or is that too gymnastic?
It's possible.
I think it's possible. I mean, if you're getting down to brass tacks, I would say to the woman, if this happened, I would make it known maybe that Kavanaugh, Judge Kavanaugh, could reach out to you at some point anonymously and apologize if he's so inclined.
If he, in fact, is the one who did it. I mean, because we don't want to priest.
That's right.
Yeah.
Of course. But she also – this goes back to what Anonymous exemplified for us. She has to – I hope she's forgiven him, but if she hasn't, she has to forgive him or she'll never heal. You don't heal holding a grudge against someone. That's not what our faith calls us to do. Our faith calls us to love sacrificially. And so to love someone and say, I forgive you, even though you may not deserve it, I need it for my spiritual good.
Well, in the spiritual realm, that's your area of expertise, Father. Do I have to forgive if the person never says I'm sorry?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
You do, even therapeutically, not even mentioning our faith, no therapist worth his salt or her salt would say you should just hold on to resentments and not let them go. That doesn't work. I mean, you have to forgive people. Forgiveness is not – there's a good saying. You could say forgiveness does not justify them. It sets you free. You have to forgive. You're not justifying the evil that was done to you, but you can't have your life being controlled by it. An evil was already done to you. Like this woman, if she were attacked or raped, all right, but should that control her life any more than already the evil that was done to her? Do we want to continue to increase the evil and the influence of this action? No, she needs to be set free from it, not to justify it, not to minimize it, but to just say, I'm not going to let my life be destroyed by this event.
And we all can do that.
And we all can do that. And it can destroy a life. That's what's so terrible about these horrible sins is that they do destroy people.
Yeah, they're not just fun and games.
No, of course not. So, I mean, like someone like Kavanaugh, if they could have a reconciliation of some kind in a therapeutic situation where it's not forensic, where he's not being threatened and she could actually tell him what she felt happened and they could have a discussion about it, that would be something worthwhile. But that's not what happened.
No.
So it happened at a point where it was an attempt to derail the climax of his career. So it's a little different. It's a little more suspect.
It does seem
not like, to be rash, though. I would not.
No,
not. I'm not going to be rash.
No, I understand that, but it does seem like with sexual assault in particular, people often wait decades and decades to report it, and
it's so awful.
And it's not because you push it down.
You don't want to remember it.
So that's not blaming anybody for anything.
That's right.
But the fact is, when a thing is reported decades and decades later, it makes it very hard to do anything about it.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. Like I don't, and it seems like we don't want to face that fact. That you could even say, "I'm so sorry that happened to you. That is horrible. You should never have been treated like that.
Right.
If someone had treated my daughter like that, I would be in a murderous rage."
Right.
But there is actually nothing that can be done about it. That both things can be true, as ugly as that is.
Yeah,
it's true. And we're in an age where a lot of times you were talking about earlier, if you don't have this experience, you have no right to talk about it. That tends to be sort of a virus that affects us when we talk about these things. So I would just say here that I had a similar experience as a young boy. It affected me in a tremendously negative way over the years that I didn't realize till many years later. But I had to forgive the person who inflicted that on me. I had to do it for my own sake. And it was past the point where I could have any communication with them, but I know whereof I speak when I talk about forgiveness and healing and forgiveness.
Man, we're meeting heroes today. Tim, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you both. We're going to do another hour. We're going to move on to lighter stuff. The conversation Please. Will be lighter, second hour. But I haven't changed my opinion. You are the two people I want to be talking with today. That's what Friday is about. When we do panel show, I get to talk to the people I want to talk to about the stuff I want to talk about.
Amen.
And Cheryl, call back. We'd love to talk with you. As a matter of fact, we need people to disagree with us because we need help. We all need help to arrive at the truth.
And I'm not as mean as I sound. Okay?
He is actually as mean as he sounds. All right.
He's a teddy bear.
888-31-TRUTH is the number. 888-318-7884, the number. This is Catholic Answers Live. Today it's panel discussion. We tackle things in the news from a Catholic perspective. I get to talk to interesting people about interesting things, and we'll hit more of that when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.